on the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Here we are again. About 24 hours later, I was on a microphone talking Freddy Peralta, and we're here again talking Freddy Peralta. Welcome in, Brewers Weekly. Go until 9 o'clock tonight. We'd love to have you involved with the program. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. The Siding Unlimited WTMJ talk and text line. You can also join us over on YouTube. Hop in the live chat, and we'll have some discussion about the Brewers, about Freddie, and about this trade. And yes, we will talk money. We will talk ownership. We'll talk, you know, salary cap, whatever economics you want to do. But first and foremost, if you've been living under a rock, here's the trade and here's what happened. The Brewers traded Freddy Peralta and his 1 year of control with Tobias Myers, who has 4 more years of team control, in exchange for Brandon Sproat, a right-handed pitcher who made his big league debut last season, appearing in 4 games for the Mets, and shortstop, middle infield, up-the-middle prospect, Jet Williams. Both are top 5 prospects in the Mets organization. Both at one point have been top 100 prospects across various publications, Baseball America, Fangraphs, MLB.com. And both are suddenly going to be competing for spots on the opening day roster. We'll talk about spring training and the battles that are going to come for the Brewers coming up down in Arizona. The trade is a little jarring. I will put my hand up right here at the start of the show. I've been saying since October, I would not trade Freddy Peralta. That's me. I'm not the guy in charge of the Brewers. The reason why I always said I don't think the Brewers need to trade Freddy Peralta is because the value that you're getting is far exceeding the cost that it would be. Meaning, the only reason they would trade Freddy is because the value they would be receiving exceeds years down the road than what they would be getting out of a singular draft pick from a qualifying offer, because you and I both know the Brewers were not going to re-sign Freddy Peralta in a free agency bidding battle with the way that he's been performing after signing the extension he signed in 2020. Now, I don't want to go too deep into Brandon Sproat and Jet Williams in this episode of Brewers Weekly, because I recorded an emergency podcast last night where we first talked about those guys, the who, the what, the why, and the how. So I encourage you to go into your podcast feeds, Brewers All Access, or over on the 620 and ESPN Milwaukee YouTube pages. There's some B-roll up there as well. So if you want to learn more about the prospects that were acquired. As for the trade itself, again, I was never in the camp thinking that they would trade him. Now, until about a week ago, I thought it was 40-60 the Brewers were going to not trade him. And then word keeps getting out that it's really good offers are coming across. And talking to scouts and talking to people around the industry, it's like the Brewers were getting flooded with calls about Freddy Peralta. And I remember I said on a podcast, I believe in December, leading into the winter meetings, talking about will they trade Freddy, will they, won't they? I said the only reason they would trade Freddy Peralta is they're not just getting some lottery pick down the road and we'll wait and see what happens. They would be acquiring players that can help the 2026 team and beyond. That was the key word. This isn't like we'll see what happens. The Brewers are getting 2 pieces here, in my opinion, and in the industry's opinion, bona fides, prospects. And the industry, just judging by the reaction today, feels the Brewers did better on the Freddy Peralta trade than the Corbin Burnes trade. And let me explain why that happened. Corbin was owed more than $15 million in his final year of arbitration. You knew it was going to be a one-year deal. You knew it was going to be a hard sell to keep him to stay, and obviously it ended up going to Baltimore. But because of that dollar amount being higher than $8 million, there was pause. There was like, it's a lot of money for us to suddenly take on for whatever team that was going to acquire him, assuming it wasn't a big market Dodgers or Yankees or something like that, for 1 year. So that impacts the value of the prospect that you're returning. The Brewers had the leverage in this case of the trade. They did not have the leverage per se in the Corbin Burnes deal when teams knew they wanted to shed salary and try to say, all right, let's get something out of him. And I'm not trying to disparage D.L. Hall and Joey Ortiz and the draft pick that they got, but the point being is that the leverage and the way that those negotiations happened were very different than the one that we just saw with Freddie. The Brewers got to pick whatever they wanted out of the litter. So many teams were coming to them saying, here's our package, we want Freddie. Here's our package, we want Freddie. No, here's our package, we want Freddie. So the Brewers were able to create scarcity and create competition, especially when Ranger Suarez went to the Red Sox. Framber Valdez is still out there, and I don't think anybody wants to touch him with a 50-foot pole right now. Dylan Cease was first off the board so fast. Zach Gallen is still out there. Maybe he's not going to get as many years as he thought. But the point being, Freddie Peralta, for a team that was looking to be competitive right now, like the Mets are, and rework it, he was the most desirable trade asset. I don't think Tarek Skubal is going to get traded. So the fact that you had the friendly salary working for you, the Brewers could say, that's not enough. Look at what you're getting for $8 million. Give us more. And that's how we ended up with this trade. Brandon Sproat and Jet Williams. We'll talk about ownership. We'll talk about economics. We'll talk about the state of the industry. Because, hey, the same week that Kyle Tucker signs a four-year, $240 million deal with a lot of it deferred, and you know we know the Shohei deal, and the Dodgers also signed Edwin Diaz, and you know the Mets get Bo Bichette, and he said like two words in the press conference. But it's just like, why are we at this point ahead of contentious collective bargaining negotiations next year? What does this mean for the Brewers, the organization? Are they being cheap? I'll explain why they're not. If you disagree, let us know. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. Or in the YouTube live chat. Come join us right here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. We're rolling along, reacting to the Brewers trading Freddie Peralta. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dom Catronio. We'll also talk about spring training. We'll get to some of the questions from social media. And we also have later in the program an interview that I had taped yesterday, Wednesday, before everything broke off, with Jim Henderson, new director of pitching of the Brewers. And I'm going to have that full podcast available tomorrow in your feeds in Brewers All Access and in YouTube as well. Now, there's a little bit in there about Freddie, not in today's snippet, but I think I'm going to leave it in there tomorrow because I think it was a really good answer. But at the time, we didn't know Freddie was about to get traded. On the ownership front and on the money front and on the uncomfortable subjects to talk about that people want to, you know, immediately clamor for a salary cap, then other people want to say the owner's being cheap and how dare the Brewers do this and all this sort of thing. I made a silly little TikTok earlier today, and I just said, if you're a SpongeBob fan, you know the viral sound of Patrick Starr and what's that character's name? The manta ray, the wallet scene. I know Isaac Marquardt knows what I'm talking about, our producer here.
Oh, is it Rayman?
Rayman, yeah.
I think so.
When he drops a wallet and you find your ID, yeah. So I just made the silly little things like, are you Patrick Starr? Yep. Like, are you a Brewers fan? Yep. And you know you are in the smallest media market and you have one of the smallest television revenue deals in Major League Baseball. So that means when players are about to be free agents, you know, you have to make difficult decisions about acquiring prospects to continue to be fruitful in the years to come because you can't play in that end of the pool with other teams. Yep. That makes sense to me. All right, cool. So the Brewers are going to trade Freddie Peralta. Oh, my God. You're being so cheap. See what I mean? Like, I think there's an even split right now between fans who get it and understand, and then the other fans that just continue to throw their hands up, acting like this has never worked before. And I understand there's no World Series trophy in Milwaukee. I get that. I understand that frustration. I understand that people think throwing money at the problem is the reason why the Brewers haven't won a World Series, that they have not thrown enough money at it. I can promise you, if it was as simple as throwing money at singular players, just cancel the World Series every year then, man. Because the Brewers can't play in that end of the pool. Throw money at it. The Angels? Okay. Throw money at it. The Rockies, who carry a higher payroll than you? How's that going for them? Okay. Throw money at it. Look at the Giants the last few years. How have the Giants been irrelevant since 2021 when they won over 100 games and then got bounced in five in the DS by the Dodgers? Right? Like, look at the Mets last year. The second highest payroll in baseball, didn't even make the playoffs. I don't understand the money thing. I don't. Because we have seen time and time again, the Brewers prove they know what they're doing. When we didn't know if we knew what they were doing, was 2015, 2016 when David Stearns walked in the door. Let me read you an excerpt from Tom Hodricourt in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. This was back in December 9th, 2015, 11 years ago. It will be years until the Milwaukee Brewers know how well they did in trading first baseman Adam Lind to the Seattle Mariners on Wednesday. Consummating the much-rumored deal on the third day of baseball's winter meetings, the Brewers acquired three teenage right-handed pitchers, Daniel Masaki, who is recovering from Tommy John surgery, Carlos Herrera, and Freddy Peralta. The reason I bring up that quote is that first line, it will be years until we find out. I don't think it'll be as long as it took to find out there about Freddy Peralta. Obviously, he made his big league debut in 2018, you know, two seasons after that trade happened. But the reason why the Brewers made this deal and said 1 year of Freddy for 6 years of Sproat and 6 years of Williams is because this is the plan for 2028, 2029. They are a better team today in 2028 and 2029 than they were yesterday. You may argue, well, Dom, they got worse in 2026. You're probably right about that. But we were saying the same thing when they traded Devin, the same thing when they traded Corbin, the same thing when they traded Hader. Now, Hader's a different story because that was a midseason trade, but then that flipped into William Contreras. The point I'm trying to make here is the Brewers are not a rebuilding team anymore. The Brewers are not a tear it all down, let's hope that by losing 70, you know, by winning only 70 games and losing the majority of our games, we're going to build this thing back up to the studs and sell everything that we have. The Brewers don't do that. That deserves a little bit of credit. Furthermore, rebuilds are not guarantees. Look at the Twins. Look at the Angels. They tore it down. Look at the Rockies. Look at the White Sox. They're not guarantees. None of these are guaranteed. But if the Brewers can put out a modest belief in their own system, they are acquiring players that other teams feel are inadequate for the modern game. It's Moneyball all over again. We romanticize the 2002 Oakland A's while failing to remember Miguel Tejada won MVP that year. Barry Zito is one of the best pitchers in the land. Mark Mulder was incredible. That's in the big three, obviously, with Huddy as well. But the Brewers still have that sort of talent while getting the short kings, right? Jet Williams only 5'7". They got Caleb Durbin. They got Sal Frelick. William Contreras was top 10 MVP, fifth place in MVP 2 years ago. He can get close to that form again in 2026. Christian Yelich was top 20 MVP votes. Bryce Durang was top 20 MVP votes. Freddie finished fifth in Cy Young voting. Caleb Durbin finished third in Rookie of the Year voting. There is talent already on this roster. So why do we continue to ignore the fact that the Brewers are a winning franchise? I don't understand how it always comes down to, oh, they're being cheap. They're being savvy. They're being the team that is making difficult decisions that are hard for other teams to do. They will wear the PR hit on their sleeves knowing that in 2 years' time, you're going to be turning around and going, man, you told me so. You told me so when they acquired Quinn Priester. You told me so when they acquired Andrew Vaughn. You told me so when they signed Willy Adames in May of 2021. Like, this dude's hitting 205. What do you see in this? Have they not earned our trust? Have they not? They know what they're doing. Give them a chance. Rant over. If you want to talk about the dynamics of the sport, the Brewers are currently receiving $0 from the television deal. The Dodgers are receiving $335 million just for existing. Okay, there is nothing the Brewers can do about that. Nothing. No one's going to walk in the door and say, hey, here's $330 million, go get whoever you want. That's not happening in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Sorry to break it to you. So, my favorite quote all year long was at the end of season press conference from Matt Arnold. When I asked him, when you see the Blue Jays play a similar brand to you, granted with more payroll than you, and you see the Dodgers who just swept you in four, is there a payroll problem or a gameplay problem? He says, it's not my responsibility to complain about the economics of the sport. It's my responsibility to figure out how to beat them. That's all I care about, is trying to figure out how to win. We don't sit here and complain. We say, what are we going to do about it? The Brewers have to make hard decisions. If you throw money at it, there's no guarantee it's going to work. There's also no guarantee it's going to work with the prospects, but there's a bit longer of a track record for the Brewers of doing it this way. So give it a chance. If you disagree, let me know. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. We'll get to some of the fan reaction and answer some questions next on 620 WTMJ. Let's get to some reaction. There's been some really good reaction from all this. I really do think a lot of people understand what's happening here. I'm Dom Catronio. This one, Chris from Pewaukee. Hi, Chris. Good to have you back on the program. I don't understand why the Brewers accepted a deal that gave us players similar to the ones we have. They play the same positions and are the same type of player that we already have in depth. I would have liked to see us get a return for Freddie that included a hitter with power that maybe could play a corner infield position. That way we'd be fielding a gap on a team instead of fielding and adding to the depth that we already have. Depth's never a bad thing. I think I've said that before on this program. And depth creates competition. Jed Williams could be on the opening day roster. I said last night I don't see it, but he could. And here's how it could happen. Maybe the Brewers are prepping Bryce Turang to play shortstop right now, and Jet's going to have an audition for second base. Or maybe they feel Jet can be a legitimate shortstop. Or maybe they feel Garrett needs a little bit more time to get healthy, and, you know, maybe Jet has an incredible spring training. Like, there's so many, and you put him in the outfield, right? There are scenarios that competition creates a higher quality of player. Maybe Joey steps up and says, hey, no, this is not the guy. Last year was a fluke. Let me get back to my first half form in 2024. That could happen too. And when you look at this farm system, Baseball America now rates the Brewers as the most top 100 prospects in the game with five of them. They all play similar positions. It doesn't always work that way. Someone's going to get traded. You understand that. But this is a really important year for two guys, Cooper Pratt and Brock Wilkin. In Brock Wilkin's case, remember, he was a first-round pick. He was that power bat that you're talking about there, Chris. The Brewers drafted him, are developing him. He has a great eye for the zone. He gets hurt in the middle of his best year as a professional last year in the celebration in Double-A Biloxi. But he came back at the very end of the year healthy. We're going to see him in Triple-A Nashville, I imagine. And man, if he's tearing the cover off the ball, we're going to see it thanks to StatCast. As for Cooper Pratt, he's also probably going to be in Triple-A. And the reason why I'm excited for Cooper is because he gets out of the Southern League, which is known for suppressing offense. He gets to the International League. He's facing pitchers that are older than him. He is developing at a faster speed and still being able to be rewarded offensively. We know what he can do with the glove. He's one of the best defensive shortstops I have ever seen for his age. I'm excited to see what he can do in spring training. Jesús Mate is at least a full year away, probably 2 full years away. So we don't need to, you know, freak out about Mate unless something absolutely insane happens this year. But when you have this prospect depth, think about how we were feeling in 2017 and 2018. Like, oh, Brewers got a pretty good farm. Stearns is doing a pretty good job here. Like, there's some guys on the way, and he's making some savvy trades. I wonder what he's going to... Boom! Christian Yelich comes walking through the door. Four prospects. We all know what happened. They didn't pan out with Miami. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to happen with... Again, but like if the Brewers are able to acquire somebody of that magnitude, like let's give them the chance to do so because the more the merrier, right? They know how to develop talent and the cream will always rise. The best players are going to get the most at-bats. That's how the Brewers run it. It's a meritocracy in the game. The reason why I bring up 2028 is because that's Christian Yelich's final year of his deal. That will be multiple players, you know, star players that the Brewers have are going to be still pre-arb or in their first or second year of arbitration. Like, for instance, Garrett Mitchell's still under team control in 2028. Bryce Turang will be in his third year of arbitration in 2028 because he's a Super 2. You've still got guys like Abner Uribe only entering his first year of arbitration that year. Quinn Priester in his first year of arbitration that year. Like, now, Sproat, he's still got all 6 years of control and all three options. Like, Jacob Mizorowski, he won't even be arbitration eligible yet. So, the Brewers have this vision that, like we talked about with the Mariners and that young pitching staff, that they all have all these guys under young team control. Young controllable pitching is like having an NFL quarterback on a rookie deal that's good enough to be an everyday starter. Like, that's the most valuable thing to have on a team. This one on the YouTube live chat from Tom B, 5594. This deal feels like trading Freddy for the sake of trading Freddy. I get the return, but I don't think it changes anything for our three-year plan. We are deep, and I agree with that, but I think it makes a three-year plan a little bit better. Like, the forecast looks a little bit better. We need elite prospects like Tong, not packages of good prospects. That's where I disagree. And this is where it's a subjective business and scouting grades and trying to find out who you want, who's good enough to be on your team. I'm not personally buying stock, per se, in Jonah Tong. And I saw some folks on social media asking, you know, what? Why not get Nolan McClain? Like, he's their top pitching prospect. Okay. What if somebody picked up the phone and said, hey, we want Jesus Mate? You're hanging up the phone, right? That's how that works. He was untouchable. I think the Brewers identify things that we want. And I think I talked about this on this show a few weeks ago, where it's like, just because they're a top five prospect doesn't mean that a team automatically wants them. Now, in this case, both of these guys were top five prospects. But you may be thinking, oh, I wanted Tong, or I wanted this. Well, you look under the hood, like, man, there's some things that are red flags about Jonah Tong, in my opinion. He walks too many guys. The dynamics of his fastball are not that great. I think his motion is not very repeatable. Whereas I see Brandon Sproat, I see a better athlete. I see more velocity. Yes, fewer strikeouts, but fewer walks. And a feel for spin, and a feel for a lower arm slot, and a feel to not be afraid of contact, not be afraid of ground balls. We know what happens when this team gets a ground ball pitcher in front of a elite defense in the game. A couple of other reactions that I've seen. Why was Tobias Myers included? Like, why did that? Well, that's probably what got it over the line. And again, I said this last night, but I'll say it again here. I don't know if Tobias was going to be on the opening day roster. And I know I've said before, depth is depth. You have it till you don't. The Brewers still have depth, trading both Freddie and Tobias. I said this last night. I mean, just listen to this list. Your eligible starting pitchers right now that are going to be competing for the opening day roster are Brandon Woodruff, Quinn Priester, Jacob Mizorowski, Chad Patrick, Logan Henderson, Aaron Ashby, Brandon Sproat, Coleman Crowe, Robert Gasser. That doesn't even include some of the non-roster invitees. Trust the process, man. I think Tobias was included to give something as a security blanket for the Mets in case Freddie leaves in free agency. That was their, ooh, just in case. Like, hey, we need to make sure we keep something here. And remember, a couple years ago, the first trade between Matt Arnold and David Stearns, Adrian Hauser and Tyrone Taylor, well, that's the trade that fielded Coleman Crowe, and who's been battling health issues. They acquired him when he was recovering from Tommy John surgery. So Adrian Hauser obviously didn't pan out with the Mets. He gets cut. But they're able to keep Tyrone Taylor, and he's still on the roster today. So teams like to have a safety net. Another one, will they, could they move Bryce Terang? I think that's a question for spring training, but I think it's certainly on the table right now. And I think that's going to be something we see from the start of spring training as opposed to the middle of spring training, like they did last year, if he's going to be auditioned at shortstop. Next question was, who's the next candidate to get an extension for the Brewers? You're saving all this cash. You don't have many guys that are on a deal. You know, you've got Woodruff coming off the books next year. Then you've got Yelly still on the books and Churio still on the books. Other than that, everyone's going to be in their arbitration phase or pre-arb. So, who's next? For me, it's Terang. I want to lock that guy up. I think he's going to be a superstar. I really do. And I've been saying that since April of last year. You may be thinking Sal Frelick, but Sal's skill set doesn't cost a lot on the open market. That's one that you can let it go the distance and re-sign him, unless something drastically changes. I'd also listen on a team-friendly deal of somebody like Abner Uribe. You can lock up your closer for a good deal. That makes it a little easier when Trevor McGill is in this chair next year and he's got 1 year of control remaining. You know there's going to be calls about Trevor McGill. And you know there's going to be calls about William Contreras next year. So, like, Jefferson Cairo. Like, there are still candidates on the team. I think they do need to get one done in the next 12 months, in my opinion. Is this the end of the offseason now for the Brewers? Is that it? They traded Freddie? Is it all over? I think so. I really do. In fact, on social media just now, William Contreras just shared him catching on a pitching machine for the first time since his finger surgery. That's good news. He's healthy. Brandon Woodruff having a fully healthy offseason, normal offseason. No surgeries, no procedures, nothing. Okay, that's good news. Otherwise, the health of this team's pretty good. I'm excited for what this team could look like in 2026. And again, we're going to be looking up in the middle of July, like, how are the Brewers doing this again? I really do believe that. Let me just put a bow on it in the next segment with three things, three up, three down, three things I like, and three things I don't like. And then we're going to hear from Jim Anderson in a little bit. All right, stay with us. 855-616-1620, 855-616-1620 on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. Text here from Reggie in Milwaukee. Overall happy with the return for Freddie and Tobias. The Brewers front office has more than earned our trust. I agree there, Reg. Welcome back. I'm Dom Catronio. We're going to the top of the hour here on 620 WTMJ. Let's do just one last wrap of this. Three up, three down. Three things I like, three things I don't like about this trade. And just at a bigger macro level. And some of this will be repeated of what I've already said today. First thing I like. It's a young, controllable arm. Brandon Sproat. That is the most valuable currency in the game. You look at that list that I just, you know, rattled off for you of all the arms that the Brewers have available to them. The only one that's not going to be on this team next year is Brandon Woodruff in 2027, that is. Priester, Miz, Patrick, Henderson, Ashby, Sproat, Cole, Gasser. They're all under team control. So that's good news. That's the first thing I love. You're getting minimum 6 years out of Brandon Sproat. The thing I don't like, first thing I don't like. So the depth. I've been on the record saying I would not have traded Freddie Peralta because the durability that he is worth is more than you realize. That he has not missed a start in 2 years. That's worth something. Can't say the same about Brandon Woodruff. Jacob Mizorowski, after all the talk about an innings limit last year, he's going to be pushed to a new level he's never reached before. Quinn Priester reached a level he's never reached before last year. Chad Patrick reached a level he's never reached before last year. Logan Henderson got hurt. Aaron Ashby got hurt. So, where is the depth going to come from that is experienced enough to handle this? I trust that the Brewers medical staff and the training staff and the, you know, physical training team understands, strength and conditioning team, I should say, understands, like, all right, these pitchers are going to have a bigger load on them. Because I was doing some research last night, and it's kind of ironic how this is how it shook out. The Brewers and the Mets were bottom five in baseball of most starts by a pitcher working into the sixth inning. Bottom five. 70 games all year last year that they have either of them have a pitcher work into the sixth inning. That number is going to have to go up if the Brewers are going to be successful in 2026. And you're going to have to get it from some unlikely sources. All right. Second thing I like. The tools that both of these guys possess, Williams and Sproat, match with what the Brewers do well. And I know we've already talked about why didn't they just get a power bat. I mean, if it was that easy, they would have done it. But you've already seen what the Brewers do with small athletic types who are able to steal bases and play good defense. That is a undervalued trait, undervalued, you know, sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Just scouting report in the game today. Everybody wants big, loud tools. The Brewers want projectability, athleticism, and certain traits and qualities that they look for. And then in the case of Sproat, he has spin, he has a lower arm slot, he pitches to contact, and can have swing and miss. He's not afraid of ground balls. Those are things that are some of the key calling cards of a Brewers pitcher. The second thing I don't like is something we talked about earlier. It's not really crowded in AA and AAA. Made, Pratt, Wilkin, Fisher, Pena, Lara. Like, there's not a lot of room right now down there. So competition will create a higher quality product. And that is my third thing I like. Spring training is going to be interesting. Who's going to be the guy that rises in spring training to say, I should be on your opening day roster, and I want to stay on the opening day roster all year? How many starters are the Brewers going to use this year? I think that's going to be a fascinating conversation. And then the shortstop, the up the middle, second base, center field, what are the Brewers going to do up the middle now? That's going to be something to monitor in spring. The last thing I don't like is something I've touched on as well. Does this trade actually make the Brewers better in 2026? I don't know the answer to that question. Give me a couple months, and granted, a couple of months, the Brewers were only 500 last year, and then they went on an ungodly trio of runs where they only lost like 12 games over the course of 2.5 months. So I don't expect that to happen, but we'll find out pretty quickly. Because the Cubs got better, the Pirates got better, and the Reds, I think the Reds are about the same. But the Central's up for grabs right now, in my opinion. I still would give the favorite to the Brewers, but I think this is the closest it's been with the Brewers and the Cubs in quite some time. We're going to hear from Jim Henderson coming up next, new director of pitching for the Brewers. Explain that title coming up next. And hear a little bit of this episode that you are going to hear tomorrow in your podcast feeds in Brewers All Access. Stay with us on 620 WTMJ. Question from the YouTube live chat before we hear from Jim Henderson. This one from Mitchell. Really like the haul they got. I think Sproat in the lab could be really good. Just don't get throwing in some of the guys that did on the Zerpa deal and on this one, meaning like Tobias and Mears. Collins was the headline of the Royals deal for Zerpa, but Mears is what got it over the top. On the Mears case, I think the Brewers felt they got all they could get out of Nick Mears. That's why they felt okay to trade him, and they still have depth to replace him, given they didn't have him available in the postseason, they didn't have him available at the beginning of the year. Granted, he got sick. That's not like a regular injury. Can't do a lot to control that. The Brewers feel they have enough to patch that up, and there were warning signs that his strikeout rate's going way down, the fastball velo's going down. Better to be a year early than a year late on a reliever. That's why I think they traded Nick Mears, and I think to trade Myers is that, like I just said earlier, I just don't think there was room for Tobias, so they felt they were dealing from a surplus. That's how that works. So Jim Henderson is the new director of pitching, new title for the Brewers' big league staff. Still essentially an assistant pitching coach, new title, new pay, new role with the industry. Now, you'll hear this full interview tomorrow, but I want to play a little bit of how when he first came back to the organization, I preempt the question and explain how we got here with Jim Henderson now being an instructor for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Multiple franchisees of like big moments within the Brewers specifically, obviously coming over in the Rule 5, developing under Doug Melvin's tutelage, and then Stearns comes in the middle, and then you go to New York, and then you end up coming back and seeing kind of a whole new organization. What were those early years like in the coaching side when you're seeing, you know, the investment and the belief in the minor leagues as you work your way up and now ultimately here in the show?
Yeah, it's funny. When I was coaching in Appleton my first year of doing like a full season in my own team, I would say 3 days before spring training broke, they brought us into the room. They taught us how to set up a TrackMan, and then said, here you go. Like, we didn't have the video guys helping us with it. It was just on the pitching coaches. And so I'd strap it on my back every day, head out to the bullpen, and I put up the machine in Appleton there, and the pitchers are asking me what this is. I don't know. I'm not sure how to read it yet, anything like that. So like, that was 2018, I believe. So that's just like the progress of how we've come across, kind of developing our pitchers in this new age of pitching, and you learn as you go here. And I think that I was fortunate to be in a sweet spot of like, you know, it came in right when I came in as a coach, all the new technology. So I was able to learn on the go, and then bring my experience from kind of the old school stuff, and being a big league pitcher to bring it to kind of mold it together for the players. So pretty fortunate timeline for myself there.
Is there anything on the TrackMan or the Edutronics that you would have wanted to use in your career that you would have been most fascinated to say, like, man, could I have maximized a little bit more here? What tickles you the most?
Just like, yeah. And just like listening to different, you know, ways of throwing a baseball. I was a two pitch guy. I had a hard time throwing a changeup. Always trying to get inside the baseball. And then, somebody was just kind of saying, well, why don't you stay on the outside of the baseball? You're low three quarter slot. Why don't you just kind of swipe across it, from right to left? And I was just like playing catch with one of the players as a coach, and I did it, and I was like, wow, there's a changeup. Like, pretty amazing that you can learn that, you know, after you're done. It's such a simple thing. But yeah, there are simple things and that you can figure out with the new tech, but there's also, you can dive in deep as you want. But yeah, it's you know, and then you find out different ways of throwing sinkers these days where you know, pronators versus supinators and being able to cut across the seams to make the ball go a different way. It's incredible what this has brought, but now it almost feels like most organizations are on even playing fields now. So, you got to keep on, there's fundamentals that you still have to harp on and have to be done to help you get to the, you know, compete against the top hitters. So we got to be good at that too.
I know you're within the forest and you sometimes can't see the whole forest from the trees, all that, you know, the cliches, but what do you think the Brewers do well? It's not like you're sitting in on other teams pitching meetings and game planning and scouting report, but like, what do you think, just knowing this organization, the only one you've known as a coach, that just seems to be that thing that maybe other teams are missing on?
It's hard to know from where I'm at. I know that we have a strong attention to detail. I don't think that I was ever coached the way that I'm coaching people or that I watch Hook do it. We're kind of on the guys every day. Like, you know, I felt like when I was a player, I had kind of freedom to do what I wanted. I kind of just did what I did and nobody really said anything. But, I think Hookie and I just can't help ourselves. If we see something that needs some help or needs to be fixed or that needs to be emphasized, I just have a hard time keeping my mouth shut. So, we just kind of go at it. And then our work with our catchers and making sure that our game plans are set in stone, that we have a plan and we're not going rogue is important. So, I think we're just on guys. We're just very diligent and making sure that, they're staying on track. And if we start seeing some, we call them, we see the oil start to leak, we want to patch it up as quickly as we can.
So you'll hear that full conversation tomorrow here in the podcast feed, Brewers All Access, wherever you hear your podcast, just consider it a bonus episode from me to you. All right, we will wrap up the program right after this on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ. All right, last couple minutes of the show. Just want to thank everybody. Been on a mic, it feels like, all day. The last 24 hours, just reading and trying to learn as much as I can. That's why we do it. You know, I think that it's easy to be a hot take smith on a day like today because you don't actually have to say anything, and I will continue to stick my neck out there and say the Brewers are the favorites to win the division, even with this trade. I wouldn't have made the trade, but I see why they did it. That's why I'm not in charge of the Brewers. I think that you're going to see a lot of takes, and be careful on Twitter. Twitter is meant to divide you. Like, that is literally what the algorithm rewards, is like people trying to rile you up. So like, understand that Twitter's trying to do that to you. Like, it's going to continue to feed you Brewers are cheap, Brewers are cheap, Brewers are cheap, all this stuff, like, because it knows it's going to create a reaction. All right, just get off Twitter. Just that's great life advice overall. But I'm on Instagram as well at Dom C Baseball. We have more YouTube content to come down the pipeline. And again, I'll be at spring training. I believe the Bucks play next Thursday, so we won't have a live show here on WTMJ, but we'll keep you posted on when the next one's going to be. And then, you know, spring training's right around the corner. Now, I will say, one thing I want to thank Matt Arnold for is the fact that they made this trade last night. And this is how I'll say goodnight, because tomorrow night, I'm going to watch John Mulaney over in Madison. And I know my phone is going to get locked up, you know, like they put them in the yonder pouches and everything. So it's just like, I know for a fact, if Freddie Peralta was not traded by tomorrow night, like, he was getting traded while I was in that show. So thank you, Matt Arnold, for getting it done and let me enjoy Friday night tomorrow night. That is going to do it for our program here. Thank you, everybody who reached out and interacted with the program the last 24 hours. Our producer is Isaac Marquardt. I'm Dominic Catronio. Keep on swinging.